Blog Talk Radio.
All opinions, comments, and representations made by the hosts of Brilliant Ideas Radio and their guests are strictly for entertainment purposes. Well, at least that's what we think we're doing. Entertaining you. Welcome to Brilliant Ideas Radio. Brilliant Ideas Radio keeps you informed about all the awesome products and people in the food industry. Brilliant Ideas Radio is about food, music, and most importantly, having fun with your friends. And now, here is the man with the master plan, Brilliant Ideas. So join the fun and call the studio number at 714-242-5272. Once again, the studio number is 714-242-5272.
Another super foodie show. Welcome to the Brilliant Ideas Radio Show, where we crank it up and talk about food, friends, music, and fun with our usual folks on the show. Good morning, Laurie. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing fantastic on this beautiful Saturday morning.
I just realized that we have been on the air doing this show for 2 years and 9 months as of today. And it's amazing that we're still doing it 2 years and 9 months later. So we must be doing things right, I guess. Well, then we brought Brian on. Hi, Brian.
Good morning. Thanks for the compliment.
Oh, he couldn't survive without you.
Yeah, you know what?
I know.
You're like a fungus.
You know what?
You just kind of hang around.
I wanted to thank you for your generous compliments about my garden last week. I mean, it really meant a lot to me. I'm just struggling to find something to compliment you on, but I'll find something.
Yeah, well, you'll think of something. But, yes, we're back again. 2 years, 9 months into this thing. We've got another brilliant show lined up. We have pretty cool foodie up today. We'll be coming on at the 12 o'clock hour. The gentleman is he's a restaurateur, but he's got some really cool concepts in restaurant that we'll be talking about, like Umami Burger. By the way, before I go any further on that, okay, I got a multiple choice question for you, Brian, since you're the czar of everything.
Multiple choice.
Is it A, Umami, B, Umami, C, Umami, or D, your mom?
Let's not bring your mother into this.
They have to have an all of the above, too.
I believe the correct answer would be Umami A.
Umami, actually that was B, but that was close enough. Umami? So
that was B?
Umami?
Yeah. Umami, yes. But we'll let Adam correct me if I'm wrong.
Adam will be joining us at 12. We'll be talking about Umami, whatever, and he's got Umami Burger. He also has 800 Degrees Neapolitan Pizzerias. These are all in California. A new concept, which Laurie's already scrunched her nose up, Choco Chicken, which is actually battered chicken with chocolate on it, and it's kind of like a mole sauce, but it's supposed to be the rage in California. He's got that in the works. I think they got their second or third restaurant. So he's coming on to talk about each one of those concepts, where they're going and some of the things where they're headed, some really, unique food. So that'll be cool. And then our musical guest will be Joe Taylor, Joe Taylor, first of all, he's eye candy for the ladies, and I've been using his post of his picture quite often just trying to lure the ladies in because, Brian, unfortunately, we don't seem to be able to do that, so I have to use whatever method I can. But to show is that he's going to be joining us at 12:30. So
I don't know. I think you're wrong there. When Brian posted that picture when he was in Austria with the sunglasses, ooh la la.
He did look like Sean
Thank
Connery.
You, Laurie. Thank you, Laurie. I love you, too.
He did look like Sean Connery, though. I have to admit, when he was in Austria.
You
with
did.
That,
you looked really handsome. You really
he,
did.
He
yep.
He
and I just cut my
so
hair
good.
Yesterday, so I'm back to my Austrian look again.
Oh, there you go. Ooh. He knows I look so good when I have my sunglasses on. It's called a copycat photo.
Whatever.
Anyway. All right. So, I guess between now and the next 20-25 minutes, we need to be talking about something about food. And I guess that's why Laurie needs to tell us, I don't know who's going to be doing this today, but one of you is going to be starting the food news. And I think, Brian, you said you had some stories. So, Laurie, who's on first?
I could talk about the coffee article first, and then Brian can chime in, and I want to hear what he has to say, because he always has good stuff.
All right.
Sure. Go for it.
Okay. Well, first I have to tell a quick little story. Brilliant took me away last weekend as a little surprise. And, okay, kind of like, you know, Brian, how I have to always have my wine glass. I can't have a solo cup. I always have to have my Farberware coffee pot. I take it everywhere, my little Farberware coffee pot. But I left the plug at the hotel, and I couldn't find another plug to go into the Farberware. So I had to buy another
Wait. Before you go any further, if we're going to talk about a coffee pot, and a plug, and a hotel, remember, this is a PG-rated show.
I checked the room for everything.
I'm
like,
there.
Oh, my But anyway,
you
I have to go to stores and get a coffee pot.
Would you like to bring your coffee?
It had to be a percolator. Oh, gosh.
All right, okay. Go ahead.
You're so old school.
Before you tell your little story, mm-hmm. Brian, explain to her that you're not really supposed to take electric appliances to a hotel room.
Well, don't they provide coffee pots in the hotel rooms now?
Yes,
they also provide the coffee, which is
it.
Terrible.
It is.
Except lately, I've been the hotels I've been staying in. They, you know, they have the little Keurig single pot
mm-hmm.
there,
mm-hmm.
And the pods are great. I love using the Keurig at home. So
I have them, but you know, I like the old perked coffee. I love the old fashioned Farberware pots. So anyway, I went to the store and I bought a new one. And it perked, and we're loving it.
Good.
Okay,
well,
now I can segue
well,
into my coffee story.
Thanks for sharing that.
So that was your call. I thought you were going to tell us something interesting about coffee.
Here's a article. I'm segueing in now. There's been plenty of chatter lately about the rising price of coffee. Not the coffee you buy at Starbucks or Dunkin' Donuts or the can of Folgers you pick up at the store, but the commodity itself. Coffee futures have shot up 60% because of a smaller-than-expected coffee drop in Brazil, which is the largest producer of coffee beans. You know what, you guys? Why did we not buy stock in coffee?
You're saying Brazil is the largest producer of coffee commodities? I thought it was Colombia.
No.
Yeah, why?
No, that
thing. I thought most of the coffee beans that we drink, you know, we consume are from Colombia.
I always thought it was Brazil first too, but I don't know unless they made a typo here in this article.
Well, you know, you can never believe anything that you read.
Of course not.
Exactly.
It's like believing anything that we say on this show.
Exactly.
By the way, to answer your question, Laurie, you said, why didn't we buy stock and coffee?
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have
Did
any money.
Did you surprise me?
We didn't have any money.
That would be a good reason.
Yeah. Okay, so
are
we? Where are we, in Colombia or Brazil?
Happening.
We're in Brazil, okay.
We're in Brazil. So will consumers pay up for their daily caffeine fix? Just like we are used to now, instead of $2 for gas, $4 for gas, people will get used to $3, $4, and $5 cups of coffee as they raise the prices. I just can't. I can't do that. We talked about this. I just can't go into Starbucks and do that.
Yeah, but we haven't really noticed the prices going up that much at Walmart.
Oh, there you go, plugging Walmart again.
But it's true.
I promise you I wouldn't say the things that I found out about Walmart on air, and I won't. And I'll leave
it at
that.
Oh, it's about Walmart. Oh, it's about Walmart. I thought you were going to tell me something nasty about donuts. So it's Walmart's the mud you have, huh?
Oh, my gosh. Can I continue? You know how, I mean, come
yeah.
on, where's Aaron when I'm reading this? I got to finish everything. Okay.
Yeah, finish
it. But is this price increase really necessary, or are we being gouged because we're addicted to coffee? Like soda, cigarettes, energy drinks, and with coffee especially, your Starbucks, your Green Mountains, and your Dunkin' brands, these stocks have been some of the biggest winners over the last 10 years because of that specific reason. And if they change the price, is it going to really change how people consume? I don't think so.
Wait a minute, stop. Did you just sneeze over there, Brian?
No, I didn't sneeze. I didn't
oh,
snort. I didn't do anything. I'm sitting on my deck. The birds are chirping. It's a beautiful day.
It really is a beautiful day. I'm going bike riding after this.
I don't have a
just
sneeze.
Thought out
I
there.
Thought that was a sneeze. I don't know what I just heard, but anyway, go keep going, Larry. I'm sorry.
Oh, and I promise you that today there will be no trucks driving through the show.
Oh, I kind of like this fucking car.
I made sure that the trucks, you know, I put the sign out in front of the house that says no trucks allowed.
Out. Oh, God. So the moral of the story is with this coffee article is, you know what, let's all just go buy some stock in coffee.
Okay.
Well, but you know what's going to happen, though? If you jump on it now, the stock's going to go down because everybody all of a sudden is going to jump on the coffee stocks and
exactly.
and the value is going to go down. Now,
exactly.
I still think that the people that are obsessed with, you know, these coffee bars like Starbucks and other places are what's driving the cost up and what's driving the stock up because they are willing to pay $5 for their cup of coffee.
Yeah, absolutely, Brian. You hit the nail
you
on
know?
The head because that's what you're saying. They're going to pay for it, so they're going to count it because they want it.
You know, it's
yep.
like people have to drive, so let's make the price of gas higher.
Absolutely.
So, Laura, what do we pay for the coffee from Walmart? We get a 33-ounce can. I'm looking at it in the cabinet right now.
$5.28, something like that.
It hasn't gone up in over a year, right?
Since we've been shopping there for the year, it has not gone up. It's the same price.
Well, I don't know. You know, we've switched over to the whole Keurig thing, and before that, I always ground fresh beans. But the average cost of a Keurig cup of coffee is 50 cents.
Well,
yeah,
our average
is probably
like 3 cents.
Yeah, no, of course. I mean,
if I continue to grind coffee,
it would be the same.
Let me tell you, whenever I had parties, I used my percolator coffee. Everyone says, Laura, you make, what is it? You make the best coffee. It always tastes so good.
Now, how many cups
people,
of that percolator egg that you carry around everywhere with your wine glass?
Well, I have three sizes. I have one that makes a 4. I have one that makes a 8, and I just bought the new one that makes a 12, and we love it.
Okay, so you mean when you go on the road, you're going to carry a 12-cup coffee pot with you everywhere?
No, I now have a plug, so I can take the 8 pot and take the plug now because I bought a new coffee pot with a new plug. I couldn't find the plug.
Hey, don't laugh, Brian, because she was thinking about taking that big 28-cup one that you use when you have parties, so, hey.
No, it's exactly the 33. It's a
33.
I have a Farberware. It's very old. My mom gave it to me. It's a 33 pot, and it makes amazing coffee.
That's like one of those catering pots.
It is. Yep. Well, with my family, you need that. I have 60 people, and that's my immediate family.
Hey, Brian, she left the plug at the hotel room, and then she's like, I'm going to call them to find out if someone turned in the plug. I'm like, please don't, because we're not supposed to have appliances in the room to begin with. Let's just let, you know, the 38-cent plug go and go get another But
the guy at the front desk really liked us. So I said, I know. He remembers. Like, he did, right? He really liked me. He was very nice.
Even though they didn't have bacon.
What's not to like about you?
Aww.
Wait a minute.
I mean,
wait. Like? You said you. You mean you all, right?
No, I was talking to Lori. Did you hear me say brilliant?
No, I know. I got your drift. So you're done with the coffee story because I am.
Well, I have another one to continue. It's a new one.
Oh, okay.
Speaking of,
I'm drinking coffee now.
Are you really? Good.
So am I.
Yes. So now I have a 12-pot. I'll have to keep making it. It's good. Brian, you want to talk about something?
Lori, go. Read your next one.
Okay. Did you know that a cup of coffee a day could help keep eye disease at bay?
Keep what?
Keep what at bay?
Eye disease.
Oh, boy.
Eye disease.
Okay. Eye
E-Y-E.
Disease.
Do you rub the coffee on your eyes?
Oh, wow.
Oh, gosh. According to a joint study,
I'm intrigued. Please read further.
Continue. A joint study out of South Korea and the U.S., which concluded that powerful antioxidants that are found in the coffee can play a role in preventing age-related eye diseases and the degeneration of eyesight. And to conduct their experiment, mice were treated with nitric oxide, which creates oxidative stress and free radicals, and it leads to retinal degeneration. And those that were pre-treated with this thing called CLA, they developed no sign of retinal damage. It is the one, and they say here, if I scroll down, that would help. It's also one of the most active tissues, and it requires high levels of oxygen. So without it, the tissue is particularly vulnerable to stress, and it's prone to the production of free radicals, which leads to the tissue damage and loss of sight. However, it's not yet known. However, they always got to cover themselves when they do these tests. However,
yeah.
It's not yet known whether drinking coffee delivers the CLA directly to the retina.
I have a simple theory to this.
Okay.
You know, when you wake up in the morning and you're blurry-eyed, and you need that cup of coffee to wake you up, you have the first cup of coffee, and then your eyesight is clear because you're awake. So there's a simpler theory.
It's true.
There's a simpler theory. We don't have to pay lab rats to run experiments.
Listen,
and you know that
we stayed with your parents, and his mom had caffeine-free coffee for a couple of days. So we kept thinking, we're tired. And then you figured out, you're like, wait a minute, we need caffeine in the coffee. Remember?
Well, that experiment was probably funded by, if you look in the fine print, funded by Maxwell Health. No.
Well, of course, one of the coffee companies is going to fund an experiment like that.
I don't get it. Is that a joke?
Yeah.
It went over our heads.
No, there's not a joke. It's just a lot of these tests and experiments that are done are funded by the people who are trying to get the results that they're looking for.
True.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Okay, well,
of course.
I have to read the last paragraph.
You know what? When you go to, I just thought of something. If you go to school to be an eye doctor, the rooms and the classes are filled with pupils.
You know what? That's the first time you actually made me laugh at one of your jokes without me doing it phony. I will give you credit.
I will too. That was pretty good. He's very quick like that. I mean, his mind is always running.
We don't know where, but it's running.
I know. Sometimes he says these things. I'm like, where does that come from? Talk about left field. But anyway, real quick. Another large scale for the study of diabetes found that people who drank 3 or more cups of coffee a day had the lowest risk of type 2 diabetes and 37% lower than those who consumed 1 cup or less per day. And scientists looked at the coffee consumption patterns of 95,000 women and 28,000 men. So there you go. It was a big study.
There you go.
That's a lot of people.
Well, I could say something about people that consume 3 or 4 cups of coffee a day. There may be a lower risk in one thing, but there's a higher risk in pollution because there's a hell of a lot more going to the bathroom and using toilet paper.
Brian,
that's true.
Did you have to?
I talk every morning. No, we won't.
That's what you guys are going to keep this radio show clean.
Clean? Oh, no, no, no. There's a difference between PG&R and clean and dirty.
Truly, though, you can be
dirty and still be PG.
All right.
It is a fact, though. It does.
It is.
Morning. I mean, matter of fact, Laurie and I won't say Laurie. I always drink my cup of coffee, and then it sort of gets the train of moving down the tracks.
Hey, look, it's the morning constitutional. We'll make it sound better. It's the morning constitutional. That's all.
There you go. All right, we've worn out coffee. We've gone right down the gutter with coffee. Okay, are you done, Laurie?
Yeah.
All right. I think that Brian had some kind of special stories he wanted to tell. You've got 8 minutes.
Well, I actually have
Brian.
A couple of things, and I promised the mention of a certain word, and I'm keeping my promise.
Okay.
Bacon. The
Bacon.
Next horizon in wine tips.
Get out.
In the race to increase sales by any means necessary, brand builders are adding flavor to wine, expanding traditional notions of the beverage, and creating new hybrid drinks. Now, you know that kind of stuff has been happening for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
It started with Boone's Farm, and then went from Boone's Farm to wine coolers and to whatever else they make now. Those what do they call those beer drinks that are? They're not really wine coolers. You know, like the Smirnoff Ice and things like that.
Oh.
I don't know exactly what they call them, but you know, they're malt beverages that, you know, new trending things. But this article just suggests that that bacon is going to be one of those things that they're going to, you know, look, they've done it with chips. You know, and we talked about that a couple of weeks ago, bacon-flavored chips and everything.
Yes.
So... they're going to come out with, I guess they're going to come out with bacon-flavored wine.
It's nice and smoky. Oh, it's going to be delicious.
You know?
It's amazing.
Well, I don't want to say it's bad news for you guys because I know what kind of style of wine you like and I know what kind of wines you like. But I read an interesting article about... Australian winemaking, and I know you love Shiraz, and you know that the Australians have been basically making very New World style wines, very fruit forward, less tannin. I don't want to say sweeter, but fruitier wines. And what they're doing now, and probably what you'll see in the 2013 vintage of Shirazes. Is it going to be a little bit more laid back, a little less fruit, a little bit more old world in style? And basically what they're doing is they're not allowing the grapes to ripen as much as they normally would. So there's more acidity in the grapes themselves. They're using less of that malolactic fermentation. You know, they're using less oak. They're using older oak. They're using larger barrels.
Is this the demand? Is that why you think they're going that way?
Well, you know what? It's interesting. They've been trying to compete. I think the Australians have realized that New Zealand has kind of taken over with the New Zealand Sauv Blanc that everybody loves, and people were not drinking Australian Shards anymore because they were too much of that New World style and maybe overdone. So now they're trying to go back into making more of a Burgundian style wine. And they're trying to take back what they had once before. You know, and with New Zealand, their Sauvignon Blancs were very bracy, and now the New Zealanders are starting to move toward the middle and make a little bit more of a fruity style Sauvignon Blanc. So everybody's looking for that right combination to make things, to make everybody happy.
Tell you, let me tell you, let me interrupt your educational wine status report. Columbia Crest Shiraz, 2005. Laurie picked up two bottles of that at our local liquor store. And these are the Magnums. How much you pay for them, Laurie?
Oh, my gosh. $10.99 for the Magnum.
Unbelievable, Brian. 2005 Shiraz, Columbia Crest from Washington State.
Dubai.
Unbelievable.
Yep.
I know we drink the ones from Australia from, what is the kangaroo people? What is that one called?
Yeah, the Yellowtail.
Not Yellowtail. Oh,
yes, we would be drinking. Well, I like the Shiraz. The Shiraz is not bad, but this Columbia Crest Shiraz 2005 is amazing. And
it
I don't
is.
Know where they get this 2005 from and how in the heck they're selling it so cheap, but it's great.
Well, being in the wine trade, I can tell you that when vendors have a large overstock of a product, they do what they call closeouts, and they'll sell wine to a retailer, and even in some cases to a grocery store. Now you have to buy your wine from a retailer because the groceries don't have them.
Right.
Wine in the stores, and so they'll get product at a fairly inexpensive price because the vendors have to dump it. You know, it's been sitting in their warehouse. Now, sometimes you get lucky and you get a wine that really has held up well. In the case of your Columbia Crest 2005, and sometimes it could be really bad. So you have to be careful with that stuff. I mean, for me, Shiraz or Syrah, I want to drink it a little bit fresher and younger, unless it's done, you know, really high end. You got lucky. But
see, Laurie,
I knew
he wouldn't be impressed, Laurie. I knew he wouldn't be impressed.
Well,
now he's going to tell us we're buying cheap old wine.
I'm impressed with the fact that you found something that you liked, you got it at a good price, and you're enjoying it. I'm just trying to explain to you why you got it at that price.
Wah, 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 wah. All right. We got to go. We got our guest calling in.
You
got to
go. We got to go already. Well,
I hear him.
Maybe we'll have time for another one at the end. This one really pertains to you, Brilliant.
Okay.
But we'll save it. We'll save it for the end of the show.
But doesn't everything pertain to me? Anyway, let's see.
No, the world does not revolve around you. I'm sorry to say.
I think it does.
It does in my world.
Oh, there you go. See, Brian? That's all that matters anyway. All right, we're going to take a break.
Yes, when are.
we're going to take a break. You know what? I'm going to play Big John. Laurie, Big John has been hitting my life the last week or so. And Big John is up there listening. He's got some new music. He's supposed to be coming to me with some new music. But you guys remember Big John Nader. He's a harmonica player.
Sure, he's Japanese. How could I forget?
He's a great guest, too, by the way. And I'm looking forward to having him on a future show in the near future. But I'm going to take a break, and then we'll come back. And like I said in the intro, we're going to be talking about all these cool restaurant concepts with our guest this morning, Chef Adam Fleischman. And it's going to be an interesting conversation. So hang on. We'll be right back. This is Big John, and the song is called Hard Times, and we'll be right back.
Ain't got no money, my bills are past due. Tell me, baby, what the heck we gonna do? A hard time. A hard time. Down the grocer, see if I can get some food on time. He said, look at here, man, your bill's past behind was our pride. The hard times ahead was home. When you ain't got no money, people, you can't have it happen no more. I went to see a friend, see if I can borrow some cash. He said, look here, friend, you never pay me back for hard times. For hard times are here no more. Talking hard times, we got hard times. Oh, hard times. Well, even behind the hard times, well, hard times are here one more. When you ain't got no one to be for you, can't live happy no more. Let's jam it out now.
I'm Ray Lampe, Dr. Barbecue, and I'm here to tell you about the Big Green Egg, the ultimate cooking experience. The versatility of the Big Green Egg is unmatched as a grill, a smoker, and even an outdoor oven. Sear steaks at 800 degrees, slow smoke a perfect slab of ribs, or even bake a crispy pizza or a pecan pie. That's why I cook on the Big Green Egg, the ultimate cooking experience.
Yes, go get yourself a Big Green Egg at biggreenegg.com. Punch in your zip code, find a dealer near you. And I don't know if you saw the photos online on Facebook last night, Brian, but I cooked two perfect chickens, which you call armadillos, on the Big Green Egg, and they were amazing as usual.
Well, you know I just try to avoid your food pictures.
Hey, I got 30-plus likes on those photos. I don't know if people feel sorry for me or they really like them, but, hey, the Big Green Egg does make some great food. So we did it again last night, and I guess we're going to do it again tonight and tomorrow night. And I'm talking about on the Big Green Egg. And check out biggreenegg.com and get yourself a Big Green Egg. Okay, now we're going to switch over here to our first guest. And since we talked about coffee and all kinds of crazy stuff and bacon flavored wine, etc., we're going to switch gears here this morning and bring on our first guest, which, if you can see the promo here, got some really cool restaurant concepts in California. Actually, he's a Maryland guy, which we're in Maryland, and can't wait to talk to Chef Adam Fleischman. If I push this button, I should have him if this thing is working right. Good morning, Adam, you there?
I'm here. Good morning.
Hey, hey, hey. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Say hello to Brian and Laurie.
Good morning,
Brian,
Adam.
How are you?
Hello.
We love your concept here, and I wanted to have you on the show. Sunblessed, our show coordinator, lined me up, and I didn't know a whole lot about your company, and when I heard the name Adam Fleischman, of course, the only thing I thought of, you probably heard this all your life, was Fleischman Margarine, And then as I started looking into it further, I said, wow, this guy's got some really cool restaurant concepts. So I wanted to have you on to talk about what's going on in California and what you're doing. And the first question I have to ask right out of the gate is, we had this discussion before you came on. You have what's called, is it Umami Burger, Umami Burger, Your Mama Burger? How do you say it?
You know, there's 100 different pronunciations, but it's actually Umami Burger.
Umami Burger.
Thank you.
Brian was right.
Brian was right. All right, so Umami Burger. We're going to take these one at a time. We actually talked about umami on our show a week or two ago, and I think the word umami or umami means savory. So can you explain to everybody what exactly is the concept of umami?
Sure. So in 2009, 5 years ago, I became obsessed with this flavor, which is the savory flavor.
I think we're losing you. Can you hear us?
Yeah.
Adam, we lost you there for a second. There they are. You're better. We lost you there for a second.
Oh, okay. I'm on a landline. So back to mommy.
We're having
can
a problem
me?
With your phone. Yeah, you keep cutting out.
Do you have speaker, maybe?
Are you on speakerphone?
No.
Oh, wow, we're losing him. Can you hear him, Brian? Nope.
No, I don't hear anything. I heard an echo,
hear me now?
But...
Okay,
now.
Yeah, I just heard you. Yeah.
Okay,
there
you go.
Hear him. Okay, wait.
Oh, this is my name. Your phone is cutting out for some reason. You want to try it again?
How about now?
Oh, yeah, that's better.
Is that better?
Yes.
Yep.
Great. Sorry about that. I'm on an actual landline.
All right, let's go. Let's try this again. Umami, how did you get started in that, and what exactly is it?
So I became obsessed with this flavor in 2009, which is a savory flavor. It's derived from glutamates, which are amino acids that are found naturally in certain foods like Parmesan cheese, tomatoes, beef. So while I was eating a hamburger at In-N-Out Burger, which is in L.A., I realized that this umami flavor was the real key to creating addictive foods, what we call the crack factor in our restaurants. And we hit on that flavor, and we decided to open a burger restaurant that re-engineered the burger through the lens of these umami flavors.
Oh,
so we put lots of...
Right now? On your phone. Yeah, now you're back again. I'm sorry, but there's something wrong with your telephone there.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, okay, you're good.
Yeah. Is he on a speaker?
No, I'm on a landline, non-speaker.
For some reason, it's not where. I tell you what, why don't you call back on the number again? Let's see if we can patch you in because we're having some problems with your phone. Call in again. I don't know if it's your system or our system, but try it again. I apologize, but let's do this again. Call the same number and try it again.
You got it. Call right back.
All right. Okay, well, what do you guys want to talk about in the meantime?
Hey, while he's calling back, I might say something about umami, and I have the question that I would ask him about, you know, the origins of umami and how this was all discovered early 1900s. So I'm really curious to know how you sense that umami flavor because, you know, my concept of savory is a little different, and my understanding of savory could be a combination of the various different tastes. So I'll be curious to know how Adam has really kind of captured that umami flavor and how people are able to taste it themselves.
Yeah, I agree, and it has something to do with the taste buds. Let's see. I got him back in. Let's see if this works this time. Let's try this again. Okay, Adam, you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Oh,
yeah, that's
good.
Much better. I don't know what you did. It's much better.
I switched to cell phone.
All right, let's try it again. So you started the concept of the umami burger, and then I'll let you take it from there.
Yeah, so in 2009, I was obsessed with this umami flavor, and I wanted to re-engineer what the burger was through the lens of this umami flavor. So, you know, everyone, every burger I'd seen had like bacon on it, cheese on it, which is great. But we wanted to up the umami quotient. So we put things like Parmesan chips on there and shiitake mushrooms with truffles and all kinds of crazy stuff that made it more of an umami experience.
Well, Brian had a question while you were gone, and he wanted to ask you about the umami and the actual savory taste
origin.
Of the umami. You want to ask that in the origin, where it came from? Do you want to ask
yeah.
him again, Brian?
Hey, Adam, and first of all, you are great with me because Adam is my middle name. So we're tight right off the bat. I'm actually intrigued by this whole idea, and you and I have some kind of parallel universes together. I'm, of course, in the wine trade, and I read your bio and saw what you were, you know, what you were into before you got into the whole umami thing. And I understand the origins of umami and how the word umami was created with the discovery of that savory flavor. But how do people that you're trying to portray this umami flavor really taste it? You know, it's like what makes the taste different? You know, with using the products that are the essence of umami.
Right. So since umami is an actual, you know, detectable taste on your palate, on your tongue, we were able to up the amount of umami in the burger so that when you put one in front of someone, even if they don't know what umami is, they taste it, you know, when they have their first bite. So it really comes through in the product, and people try it, and they understand what umami is. But before they've tasted it, it's really hard to get them to know what it tastes like.
Yeah, I mean, my first question was kind of like a joke question, was do you use a lot of dashi in your meat blends? Because, I mean, dashi was, you know, how they discovered umami. So I was going to ask whether, you know, you introduce dashi in, you know, in your food at all.
Well, yeah, we pretty much do because we don't put anything inside of the meat. We keep it as a traditional burger patty because we use very high-quality meat, and we grind our meat mm-hmm. in the restaurants, but we put a umami rub and an umami liquid on top of the burgers when they're cooked, and those have some dashi-type ingredients in them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, how many restaurants do you have now, Adam?
For umami, we have about 25.
Wow.
We just opened one this week in New York on Wall Street, near Wall Street. And,
congratulations. Wow.
Thanks. And then we were working on 6 other brands at the same time.
Now, you're also – have you opened any in Maryland yet? I know you're a Maryland guy. Have you opened
No.
any here?
We looked in Maryland, but it's too expensive there.
Yeah.
More than New York?
Imagine.
They charge the same rent in Maryland as they do in New York, but with a third of the people. So as much as I wanted to open in Maryland, we haven't been able to find anything. But that said, we will definitely be opening Maryland. You know, I grew up there, and I went to UM. So we will definitely be opening something in Maryland, maybe even in Baltimore, maybe in Northern Virginia, something in D.C.
Wow.
Absolutely. You'll see something in the next year.
Let's talk about
the
other restaurant concept, 800 degrees Neapolitan pizza. Tell
right,
us a little
so,
bit about that.
Around the same time we started Umami, we realized that, you know, there was lots of pizza out there and lots of home delivery pizza, but no one was taking advantage of the ancient way that they did it in Italy, which was in this 800-degree wood-burning oven, which cooks the pizza in a minute and a half. And we said, hey, if you can cook a pizza in a minute and a half, why don't we just do it sort of like Chipotle style where people line up and then we have this big fireplace in front of them and we cook pizzas right there and hand it to them. So that was the original inspiration. Since then, you know, the chain's taken off. It's a huge hit. We sell, you know, 1,200 pizzas a day
wow.
in all locations. And it's a monster hit. It tastes delicious. It's inexpensive and it's VPN certified, which means we were certified by Naples as doing authentic pizza like they do in Italy with the right cheese and the right sauce and the right crust and
oh,
so
cool.
forth.
Wow.
Now, can you actually
yeah.
cook it that fast? I mean, literally in a minute and a half,
yeah.
they're actually cooked?
Yes. At 800 degrees, it cooks in a minute and a half, correct?
Yeah, I have clients that built their own brick ovens, and I know that pretty much the starting temperature, once you get your fire going, is around 800, and they can get up to like 1,100, 1,200 degrees. And one of my clients is traditional. He's from Naples, and, you know, they do definitely cook a pizza in, you know, about a minute, minute and a half. But I love this concept because it's kind of like, you know, you go to the Mongolian grill places and you set up your own bowl of stuff that you want to cook, and then you give it to them and they throw it on the grill, and then, you know, minutes later it's there. I think it's a great concept.
Yeah, we have 33 different companies imitating our 800 degrees already that are other brands that are starting here in California. So it's definitely taken off. But like we said, none of them use the brick oven, the wood oven, to really get the temperature hot enough. So, you know, we didn't know it at the time, but it's a great restaurant concept because the pizzas are, you know, $7-$8, but you can't make this at home. No one's going to have that brick oven or go through that trouble, or very few people will. So now, we took advantage of that.
How many of these 800-degree restaurants do you have in California?
We have one open on the Strip in Vegas. We have three open in California, and we have about 10 more coming in California and Vegas.
Wow.
And Chicago and some other cities too. New York City. Yeah.
Now, the next one I got to talk about is the one that's got the buzz around here, is this Choco Chicken. You got to tell us what Choco Chicken is.
So Choco Chicken, you know, after we had a big hit with burgers and pizza, we had never really served any chicken in any of our restaurants, and I wasn't really looking for a chicken concept, but it was in the back of my mind, and I met some amateur chefs here in L.A., and they sort of pitched me this idea, and they said, how about chocolate fried chicken? And I said, well, that's pretty original, and I Googled it, and no one had ever made it really before, and it wasn't on the Internet, and I said, well, why don't we make it together and see how it tastes? And we made it, and it was literally like it just blew us away. It was just so incredible. The recipe that we came up with, you know, people think you're just going to take fried chicken and dunk it in Hershey syrup, but it's nothing like that. It's infused with chocolate. In fact, the best way to describe it is we're using chocolate like an umami ingredient and making it more savory and more deep. So the chicken's very mahogany and chocolate looking, but it tastes very more savory rather than sweet.
Now, is it like mole sauce? Is that what it's like?
No, it's nothing like that. Mole sauce is really, you put it on, it's like a stew, and it's got peppers and lots of stuff we don't use, and fruit and nuts. And this is really just like a chocolate-infused chicken, fried chicken.
Amazing. Now, you've got, what, two of those restaurants now?
We don't have anything open. We keep getting delayed, and we're opening the first one this week, but all the press came out, and it was universally lauded, and then we have a second one that's going to be opening in Santa Monica. So, yeah, we have two, but we're opening this week.
I mean, the concepts you have on the food and the restaurants are not your typical ones. That's what's so cool about this, with the umami and also the 800-degree pizza and then the Choco Chicken. Now, do you have anything else up your sleeve you're working on that you can share?
We're working on a type of vegetarian concept that's going to be really addictive. We're working on a Chinese noodle concept that's going to be completely unusual, and a bunch more.
Wow. Now, the actual
Amazing.
Restaurant group, is it called, I was trying to find more details online, and I couldn't find a whole lot, but is it Umami Restaurant Group, or is it a different group?
Umami Restaurant Group is the parent company of Umami and 800 Degrees, and then Advantage Restaurant Partners is the parent company, my other company, of these other brands, including Choco Chicken. So if you go to the Advantage website, you can see all the brands we're working with.
Oh, cool. Now, your background.
Now, I have another question, actually.
Sorry.
Considering the fact that you have, you know, you have at least the Umami burgers all over the country, or almost all over the country now, is do you set these up as franchise, or are you, you know, very much in control of every one of the restaurants?
We're in control of every one of the restaurants with partners. We haven't franchised anything yet.
Okay. I mean, it's just, you know, because there are a lot of people that create a concept and then they franchise everything out. So I was curious to know whether, you know, you guys were maintaining control and not, you know, selling them as franchises.
Yeah, the reason we're not doing that is, I mean, we may do it in the future, but the recipes are a little difficult for a franchisee. It's not super formulaic like, say,
right.
a Subway would
yeah.
be, where, you know, pretty much anyone could make it. They're a little more technical, so... So we may franchise one day. Right now, we're doing it ourselves with real chefs.
No, I like that hands-on and being in control.
All your concepts literally talk about you. Your background is what? You're actually a trained chef. What was your background before you got into all these different restaurants?
I was in the wine business here in L.A., and I was importing wine, and I had some wine bars, and I was just kind of just – tooling around in the wine field and really enjoying that. And that was really my first passion.
Huh. And then from there, you just got into the food side. The concepts are really unique. I honestly have not been at any of the restaurants, the pizza or the umami, if you're saying it wrong. But I wanted to try those out. And we appreciate you taking time to be on the show today just to share
my pleasure.
Details of your new products. Everybody should check out. And the best place for people to find out more is their website they can go to find out more about all the different brands.
You can go to umami.com, UMAMI.com.
All right, umami.com. We really appreciate you joining us this morning. Thank you for your time. And keep us posted. As you get more new contests and stuff, let us know.
I will indeed. Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Thank you very
Thank
much.
You.
Take care.
Have a great
All
weekend.
Right. There you go, guys. Check out umami.com. You can find out more about Adam and his restaurant concept. I like that kind of stuff. It's just not your average
yep.
run-of-the-mill restaurant.
He's a hard worker, boy.
Yes, definitely. So,
And you know what we can say is those are good trends.
Yes, definitely.
Yep.
The chocolate chicken, you know I'm dying to try that one. I'm gonna
have
to
know.
Go
oh, yeah.
to my next trip to California, if he's got this thing open, I got to go try that out. Chocolate and chicken together, they can't be anything better. It doesn't honestly sound that good, but more I'm sitting there thinking about it, because when I said mole, I've had chocolate mole sauce on chicken and beef and other things, and the chocolate does make it pop, so it should be interesting. So, let's see, we got... 7 minutes before we bring on Joe Taylor, and so I want to ask you, Brian, you said you had a story that was more Grilliant-related?
Yes, it's definitely Grilliant-related. But the problem is that the reason it's Grilliant-related is because when I think of you, I doubt how this could be true.
Oh, boy.
It's the article... The article headline says, "Wine found to improve memory."
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't see how this...
I know. Now, here's a big word. Be careful. I know it's tough. And I try to avoid the big words with my conversation with Adam, just so that, you know, it wouldn't embarrass you.
Well, I'm sure Adam would understand, but you remember you're talking to me. So what's the big word?
All right. The word is resveratrol. Resveratrol.
Okay.
A compound found in red grape skins has been found to improve memory, according to a new study. As reported by International Business Times, the study published in the Journal of Neuroscience found that people who take resveratrol supplements have better short-term memory. Conducted by researchers from some university in Berlin, the study analyzed the effects of resveratrol on overweight people. Now, I don't know why they only did it with overweight people. Before and after the six-month study began, participants took a memory test, gave a blood sample, and had their brain scanned. Now, this is something I would love to have done to you.
So would I.
I'd like to see that, too.
During the study, 23 volunteers were given 200 milligrams of resveratrol a day, while a further 23 were given a placebo. The study found that those.
That's so funny.
You have this article?
I'm looking at, I have the article. Yeah, I have the article.
Oh, okay.
Something very similar. Yep.
Yeah. The study found that the ones that took the resveratrol had better short-term recall, and the ones that took the placebo didn't. So, again, I ask you, you guys, you know, you drink a lot, Grill. So why do you have such terrible memory?
Well, you know, it's funny you should talk about this, because I just had this conversation with Sunbless this past week, and she's one of those type people, when we have guests on the show, and this has to do with memory, by the way, so I'm getting there, but when we have guests on the show, she knows everything about the guests, from how many kids they have, what their birthdays are, what their dogs' names are, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Honestly, as you can tell, folks, I don't dig real deep into what the guest is and who they are. And then after the show, honestly, sometimes, not that I'm being aloof, but I just don't remember who was even on the week before, because I have short-term memory loss, I guess. So I don't know why the wine isn't helping me, because I do drink my fair share of wine. So, yeah, I do have a memory problem, and the wine's not doing it, so maybe I should be taking these resveratrol, or however you say it, supplements, because the wine ain't working.
Well, I don't know, maybe...
I think it's resveratrol.
Maybe you're drinking the wrong type of wine, and maybe the wine that you're drinking is just killing brain cells.
Yeah, here he goes, talking about the cheap wine we drink. Are you telling me that the Shiraz that I bought doesn't have resveratrol in it?
I'm sure it does.
You have to. The problem is, you know what it is with resveratrol, however you say it? You have to have so much of it in you. So now they're trying to make it a pill, because you're not going to get the amount you really need. But they're just finding
Whenever I talk to you, Grill, I have short-term memory loss, too, because I just want to forget.
Yeah, I'm the same way. It's like I don't even want to remember anything you say, that's for sure. So maybe it's just a protection mechanism that pops into my head.
I wanted to make another comment about the whole Australian thing. You guys probably don't have anything to worry about, because the wines that are more mass produced and that are less expensive, I'm not going to say cheap wine, less expensive, are probably going to continue to make this very fruit forward style.
Australian story are you talking about? That was a joke about memory. Never mind.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we're just going to have to make our own wines.
The serious producers, and you have, you know, serious producers in every country, they want to make wines that have a lot of longevity, so they need to make wines that are more of the old world style, that have the acids that will allow them to age. You know, so there are a lot of Australians that are just, you know, focused now on doing that kind of thing. So they have wines out there that can people say, hey, I've got this bottle of Shiraz from, you know, 1998, and it's incredible now, you know, because it was done in that style, and it was, you know, it had the ability to age.
Are you done?
Yeah, I'm done, okay?
Can I add a line in there about resveratrol
real quick? Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. It says, researchers hope resveratrol can be turned into a drug that fights cholesterol, heart disease, Alzheimer's, and some other types of cancer. So there you go. And resveratrol is found in tiny amounts of grapes, like blueberries, cranberries, mulberries, peanuts, pistachios. And the drug companies have been searching for ways to deliver large amounts of this chemical in a pill. So there you go. And that's why we're not getting enough of it. You need, like, tons and tons and tons. Remember, I think, Brian, didn't we talk about this a while back? Like, I forget the amount you need to have it really actually affect you in a good way.
Yeah.
It's huge. I have to drink, like, I don't know how many bottles and bottles of red wine to get the right amount. So that's why they're trying to get into a pill.
And we're doing our fair share of time.
You know, and if they come out with that pill, then we don't have to worry about all these foods that cause cancer and give us high cholesterol. We can eat whatever we want and just take a pill.
There you go.
Well, don't they already have those pills like Crestor and Lipitor and all those other things that, you know, lower your cholesterol? Maybe they have resveratrol in them.
Let me know. You guys let me know when you're done so I can go on to the next guest.
No, we're not done.
All right. I'm going to take over here anyway because let me go see. Yep, the show is called Green Ideas, Foodie Radio. So
Big Green Eggs commercial, maybe?
No, we already did that, Laurie. Hey, you're not getting enough of that resveratrol or whatever. Okay, our next guest, his name is Joe Taylor, and I mentioned him early on. He's the guy who's a hunk on the photo that I've been posting on Facebook and on the show here, trying to lure the women into the show. He's got some great music. I'm going to play a Joe Taylor song. It's called Possible. I think you guys, men and women, will like this guy's music, and we'll be coming back to talk to him and hear some music, and I'm going to go drink some resveratrol and be right back.
Burn the shadow on my bedroom floor as I wonder what it all is for. Does it all add up to nothing? Turned away a love behind the store. Shut it down because I wanted more. This world away from no one.
is Joe Taylor, and the song is called Possible. And Joe is joining us this morning, calling in here. Let's press the button. Good morning, Joe. Welcome to the show.
Hey, good morning. How are you doing?
We're doing great. I have a question to ask you before we get into finding out more about you. How does it feel to be a piece of meat? Because I've been using your photograph on my Facebook page all week long to lure in all the women to listen to the show. So how does it feel to be a piece of meat? He says it's a foodie show.
Honestly, of course, it's flattering, but have you ever heard the saying, be careful what you wish for because you might get it. So, you know, it might be fun to maybe meet a few people, but you got to be careful because they may want a little too much. You might not be able to get away.
Well, I like your music. I was downloading
Thanks,
music
man.
And listening to it this week. Great, great stuff. And I've had people who've actually contacted us. They said you were coming on. The first question I have to ask you is, are you any relation to James Taylor?
No, he's not my dad. I get that a lot, though. and normally what I'll say jokingly, I'll say, yeah, I do a gig on the I used to gig in the subway. I'd do this whole subway music under New York thing. And they'd be like, is James your dad? And I'm like, yeah. And he's kind of pissed off at me. And he kicked me out of the mansion. So I got to earn a living with playing in the subway. So that's normally my response. I apologize for the profanity, by the way. Sorry.
That's quite all right. It's internet radio. It doesn't matter. By the way, say hello to Brian and Laurie.
Hello, Brian and Laurie. Pleasure.
Hey, Joe. How
hello
are you?
Hello there, Joe.
Hey,
I want that
thank
song
you
on
for
my
having
iPod.
Me.
You want what, Laurie?
I want his song on my iPod so I can dance around with it.
I'll certainly, absolutely. Whatever you need, Laurie, we'll make sure that you Stephanie will get it.
And Joe, Brian is actually an ex-musician. Well, I guess he's still a musician. You're never an ex-musician.
I'm not an ex-musician.
I'm a little scared, though. Normally the word ex normally doesn't mean happy. Well, most musicians aren't happy.
Actually,
so,
as an ex-musician, I'm more happy now than when I was
a musician.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, you said that you might still be a musician, that you're still a musician, so...
Oh, no, I still play, but I spent over 25 years in the music industry back in New York.
Very cool.
That's where I grew up.
Well, see, Joe, we actually...
It's a great city.
Brian is usually our eye candy for the women, but he got surpassed by you on today's show. So, anyway, tell us about Joe Taylor and how you got into the music business and a little bit about what you're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. I originally started out in Toronto, Canada. And I used to sell furniture for, like, the Hudson Bay Company. It would be comparable to Macy's down here. And so one day I got a phone call from a friend of mine in New York, and they said, we're looking for a bass player. This happened on a Thursday night. And I said, okay, well, can you come down for Saturday? We have a gig. It's at this great venue called the Bitter End in New York City. And I said, okay, sure. So I took the train to New York. Literally like Saturday night, I was on stage at the Bitter End, and I did my first gig, so-called gig in New York. And from there, I realized that I wanted to definitely stay and work in New York. So the next couple of years, I dealt with immigration, kind of going back and forth. I eventually got the proper paperwork, and then I moved down to New York full-time to pursue my career down here full-time. So I was when you work in furniture, you sell on commission, so
right.
I did really well. I got lucky. I sold, like, a ridiculous amount of furniture, so I could, like, survive for, like, had about, like, 7 or 8 months.
I don't think that had anything to do with it, did it? Your looks? No.
Actually,
Vanna White does by, you know, the letters just kind of stand by the picture.
Oh, my goodness, with Vanna. Oh, well, I think maybe the looks help a little bit, but there's a lot. There's much better looking folks out there than me. You just got me a little airbrushed in that picture. But, ultimately, I moved to New York, and then a couple of years later, I expanded to Chicago, and then I eventually got out to L.A., and I spend a lot of time in L.A. now. And that's pretty well my story. I mean, I hooked up my producer, saw me in this little cafe in L.A. It's called the Unurban Cafe in Santa Monica. I don't know if you guys know it. It's a real small, you know, kind of small place. And so there was probably about four people in the audience, and my producer was one of them. He heard the music. He said, you know what? We really like you. We want to produce you. Lo and behold, the other producer he was working with, his name is Matty Spindell. He's actually, turns out that he's Rick Springfield's producer, and he's done, like, you know, everything from Dr. Feelgood by Molly Crew to he won a Grammy for working on Supernatural by Santana. And so, I had no idea who he was for probably a year. I worked with him for a year. I didn't even know that he was working with Springfield or that he had worked with every, you know, just about every major artist in the past 30 years. I didn't know. So somebody finally broke it to me and said, dude, you know who you're working with? And I'm like, well, who am I working with? I have no idea. I'm just trying to write. I'm trying to get some great songs because he's a real tough ass about the songs, and he's really breaking my balls. That's all I know. So I finally did the research, and lo and behold, that's who I was working with. There you go.
Now you have a song that I'm not familiar with. It's called "The Sweetest Tune," and it actually charted in the top 10 in Canada.
It was actually number one in Canada. I actually went to number one for I beat everybody out. It was pretty cool. I was like, wow. We had no promotion. It was like, and the song spun for, I think it spun for like a year and a half, 2 years.
Wow.
It just wouldn't die. You know, it was just no support whatsoever. You know, I just had a few DJs that were very fortunate that really liked the song, and they passed it through their program directors. You know how hard it is to get stuff on the radio, and you got to pay everyone off on the big radio station. Shh, don't tell anybody.
Stations like ours, you don't have to pay us at all.
Well, maybe you guys should start charging. You're like, you know what? We're getting the word out here for you. We start charging a special fee for you guys. Hey, we got to put our kids through college, right? There you go. So that dental will tell you. Braces.
Well, you just came out with a new CD. I believe it's called Anything's Possible. Is that really new?
Yeah, Anything's Possible. Yeah, actually, it's been out for a couple of years, 2 years or something like that. But yeah, no, it's still we're pretty well working on some new material now, which is good. So I'm very, very excited to continue that. So,
well, I have to ask you a question. I want to make
Absolutely.
Sure I understand this correctly. The songs that you sent to me, they all have one word in the title. Is that correct?
What songs did I send
well,
you?
The one I'm going to play next is called All. Is that the right title for the song?
What is it?
It says All. A-L-L.
I think we had a typo.
We must, okay, because I have one. That's fine. I almost wrote back Sunblast, and I said, are you sure these titles are right? I've got All, and I got Here, I got Possible, and the other one you'll love is The, T-A-G.
Oh, my goodness. Well, that The might be The. Have you actually listened to the
yes.
to the songs to make sure that
yes.
it's the process?
They're great. I was loving the songs, yes.
Yeah, the songs
we have
good. I tell you what we'll do. Well, we'll play one of them, and then you can tell us.
And I'll tell you what the title is. Perfect. What a great idea.
Aim that soon.
That's a brilliant idea.
All right. We're going to have a game. Since you brought up Vanna White, we'll have to pick. What do I think the song is? I'm guessing when it's the, I'm guessing the would be The Sweetest Tune. I'm guessing All is All Around the World. That's my guess. Those are my vowels. And then Here
with
Here and Gone. Exactly. And then whoever wins, whoever can guess is going to get a free T-shirt and a free CD, and I might even show up and sing the concert. How does that sound?
There you go. All right, hang on. I want to play. I'm going to call the song The, and then you tell us
yeah,
what the name is.
Yeah, it's definitely The Sweetest Tune. Wow, we had a little miscommunication on that one. That's funny.
All right, hang on a second. We'll be right back.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
conversation between me and you. So if you want to go to a dreamlike destination, why don't you pack up all your sweet silence and leave room for some inspiration? Let's jump right into the moment where the clock strikes no time soon. Lose ourselves in a hypnotic ocean. Find the sounds of the afternoon. And then we'll listen to the sweetest tune. Roll down the window. Try to find what matters. Just let the breeze sweep on through your weary mind. Clear away the chatter. What makes it so hard to live an unplanned journey? Will the changing scenery help me to navigate the path I can't foresee?
So did anybody win the prize? Or?
what is it? The sweetest what?
The sweetest tune.
The sweetest tune.
I love it. It has a little bit of a reggae. I love the beat of your music. I really do.
Oh, thank you. Well, here's a funny story about that. You know, before I got to L.A., I was very like, you know, in New York, trying to be all tough and you're going to write about all depressing crap. And so the first thing my producer said to me was, listen, enough with the therapy, you know, enough with the I'm lying dead in a garbage can or, you know, really sad kind of depressing crap. He's like, could you please try and write a happy song? And so that's pretty well what that's what happened for
really,
because
I feel like I'm on a beach on an island. So there's something very like margarita-ish with that. I love it.
Absolutely. And, you know, the idea is to you know, kind of, I wrote that in the middle of the, with my writing partner, Hillary, in the middle of the winter. It was like, you know, I think it was probably like 25 degrees in New York, and it was just not nice. And so I was out in L.A. a lot, and it was a beautiful day, you know, 75 degrees. I was taking a ride up to Santa Barbara, and the song just kind of came out, you know, when I was in the car, and it just kind of went from
place.
There.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, it was very inspirational, you know. Yeah.
What do you call your music? I'll use that fancy music word genre. What genre are you
in? Oh, you know, that's a hard one because I'd say I'm probably retro acoustic, but I still use electric. Retro acoustic pop, or I could be retro acoustic. I don't know, retro acoustic, some eclectic maybe. I don't know. I mean,
just call it the Joe Taylor style.
I'm a little bit of train. I like that, the Joe Taylor. I'm the Joe Taylor category.
There you
exactly.
go.
That's my category. So when I'm talking to the labels and they're saying, what's your category? Because we need to stuff you in a vending machine and categorize you. I'll say I'm just the Joe Taylor category. So make another category in your vending machine, right?
All right, let's play another song. Go ahead,
I could say something about genre. Coming from a musician that survived New York, as you have, is musicians that are survivors don't have a genre. They just do whatever it takes.
I agree with you. You know, I was waiting for you to say something, and I was really looking forward to it because I knew that you as a musician yourself would be like, you're damn right if you survive, you are just simply you. I mean, absolutely. I agree with you, and I think that's the difference between somebody who's a flash in the pan and somebody who sustains. You know, normally what you'll get is one artist that'll break out, a new style will come out, and then you'll normally get a couple of, you know, copies. But, you know, at the end of the day, though, if you're copying somebody, you know, I guess for musicians out there, whatever, and you know this, you're not going to be able to sustain because the amount of energy and that you have to put into this and the amount of you take a lot of hits when you do this. I mean, you get a lot of rejection, and to withstand the pounding that you're going to get as a musician, if you're anybody but yourself, you're going to get annihilated. And you might get lucky and you might squeeze through, but you are going to get so beaten up in the later rounds that you're just going to fall off the map, and it's like you never were there. And so from one musician to another, I'm glad that I absolutely respect a musician, you know, who sticks with what they want to do and what they've got to do. And boy, did they ever try and change me, you know. And I wasn't afraid to meet them on certain things, but I pretty well held the, I got to tell you, I held the line. I did what I wanted to do. And, you know, that's a hard thing to do. You get a lot of pressure and, you know, money. It's like, hey, you know, we'll give you this and we'll give you that, and all you got to do is this. And, you know, and at the end of the day, I'm not trying to be an ass or sound like a, you know, like I'm anything, you know, more than just some jerk, you know, banging his head against the wall trying to do this thing. But, you know, however quick you think it can come, it can go away very quickly, and it can just be gone. You know, you think you got friends, you don't have friends. You've got a lot of people that are trying to jump on your bandwagon when it's great, and when it's not great, it's like, where are you? Where, I can't see you. It's like, hello. Yeah, you get your binoculars out. It's like, I can't even see you, people. Oh my God, you're running away. You know, they're gone. It's like they're in another time zone.
Good for you.
Well, thank you. Yeah. I appreciate that. We'll have to work on a jam sometime.
We're almost out of time.
You got it.
Yep. All right. Well, let's do this.
All right, what I want to do is, before I let you go here, I'm going to play your last song as a closing song for the show, but you said you're working on something new. When is the new material coming out? What's the expectation?
I'm working on the goal is to put out another single, a new single in August. That's going to be the goal.
Okay.
So just to come out with something.
If people want to get your stuff now, they can go to Reverb Nation.
You can get me on Reverb Nation, but the best thing to do is just go to joetaylorofficial.com. It's going to have every possible link. You're going to have a million links. You can have a link to whatever you want on that.
Okay.
That's the main source. So joetaylorofficial.com.
Joetaylorofficial.com.
Oh,
we're going to do the potluck now, since I don't know the names of the songs here. I got one.
Well, we got to pick one. Well, let's just pick up. You got all?
Yeah.
Let's do all, because it's happy. All right.
Was it actually called?
Yeah.
Happy.
Oh. And I have a video, too. It's a cool video.
Is it actually called All?
It's actually called All Around the World.
All Around
but
the
since
World.
Since we got
oh,
lost
happy,
in translation.
You know, I just wrote a children's
all
book
right.
called, well, I'm going to be publishing it, called Happy Around the World. So there we
yes,
go.
Yes, you did. There you
well,
go.
Well, sounds like you and I
got
to talk then. So, all right, I'll shoot my email off.
Definitely.
All right, well, Joe, thank you. And all right,
guys.
And Brian, we're going to close out the show.
All right, Brian,
it was
a pleasure.
All Around the World. And everyone,
you
thank
too.
You for joining us. Thanks to our guests. And thank
Stay
you, everyone,
true to yourself,
each and every
Joe,
week.
I love it.
Yes, definitely.
Thank you so
and
much.
Next
Keep
week, we'll
Say
be
hi.
Joined by Chef Albert Hernandez and the Untamed Chef, and we have another singer joining us. And everybody, have a nice weekend. Thank you again, Joe. And we're going to play your song as a closing song all around the world. Everyone, have a nice one. We will see you next week.
Cheers, guys. Floating somewhere in a bottle out at sea, and a bartender serving laughs out there like a message you don't have to read. There's a teacher's desk of papers with an apple underneath, and the student learns the wisdom of its simple gravity. I want to be it under me. Those in love, when they finally get an order, they're like angels from above. There's a million songs unwritten, just waiting to be sung, and a voice on every continent that can carry everyone. Yeah, I want to be the ring in my ears.
When you thought radio was safe. A new kind of radio is on its way. Food, music, and friends. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. Coming in 2014.